Welcome, everyone. This is Guidelines for Church Safety and Security Team, Part 2, by David Johnson.
Yes!
All right, so as I said, this session will kind of dive in a little bit deeper. We'll kind of take a look at some scenarios and what some of the ideas for response may be. Let me just preface this with a lot of this is going to be determined on the makeup of your team, certain factors within your actual church and your church community. Some of the material I'm going to dive into here is going to be anecdotal to my experience and in the capacity that I currently serve on in my church security team down in Texas. I've also done a little bit of research into what some of the threats are that churches may face, and I've tried to categorize and prioritize those a little bit for you, and to think about how we should be able to respond to some of those things. So before we get into that, I just do want to hit a couple of things that I covered in my first session that I think are going to be relevant here. Again, these are going to be some considerations. We talked about developing standard operating procedures, how important those are for your team, just so everybody knows where they need to be and what they need to be doing should a scenario take off. Training to those SOPs, so those SOPs will become the foundation of your training, making sure that everybody on your team is on the same page, and making sure that should something happen, it's not just you have the knowledge, but you have also the physical trained, your body is trained to be able to react to that, okay? And being proactive, all right? We're trying to identify threats before they actually become threats. We want to catch them out in that yellow zone. And again, I'll pull that map up here in a second. But we want to try and catch them before they enter our sensitive areas, okay? A couple of new things I added to this slide. You should have, okay, we did talk about medics as well. It's important to have someone who can respond to medical situations. Some things I really want to hammer on this session. Prioritizing de-escalation. When we are approaching somebody, or if there's somebody who's belligerent that we're dealing with, somebody who might possibly become a threat, the idea is not to escalate that situation by meeting with aggression. And again, this is something now where it becomes difficult for people who have like a law enforcement or military background, such as myself. You want to immediately get aggressive with somebody that's being aggressive, but the idea here is we want to de-escalate. We want to minimize the impact on the normal proceedings for the church. So you're being calm, collected, cool-headed, level-headed. You're thinking about the scenario, you're taking it in, and letting the scenario itself escalate, you yourself are not escalating the situation, okay? Again, I'm gonna hit this, and I'm gonna probably hit it a few more times before this is over, how important it is to maintain a relationship with your local law enforcement, okay? Somebody on the team, preferably the person that's leading the ministry, should be staying in contact with law enforcement, making trips down there, make sure they know who you are. If you need them to respond, you want to have a pre-existing relationship with them. They're going to be more likely to respond and maybe even get a quicker response time out of them. Maintaining a BOLO list. BOLO is an acronym, which is a be on the lookout. For those of you that don't know, this is something we maintain in our church, is we have pictures and names of people who have either been trespassed or who are not allowed in the building. Why it's important to have pictures of these individuals is not everybody on the team may be familiar with who they are, so they want to have some sort of visual representation if they identify them walking through the door. You're going to want to maintain this, make sure it's active, make sure it's up to date, have a procedure and a criteria for what it takes for someone to actually make it on the BOLO list, but maintaining a list that will be like, okay, these are the individuals that we've either had to kick out in the past, we've had issues with, and they've been legally trespassed. We've had police respond, and they've legally trespassed them. Or they have orders of protection or restraining orders against them. A lot of domestic situations, you'll run into that, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as we get into the slides here. And performing after action reviews. After every time you respond to something, whether it be something as simple as we had a drug overdose in the bathroom, or we had someone with mental illness have an episode, or if it is something that's more aggressive and more violent. When that situation calms down, you immediately, while it's still fresh in their mind, you want to bring the team together. Talk through, hey, what did we do right in this scenario? What are some of the things that we can remember for the next time this happens? Where can we improve? How can we make our response time better? How can we maybe handle that situation a little bit differently? And you want to continually do that and give everybody on the team input. Give them the ability to say, hey, I feel like we could have done better here. and make sure it's constructive. You don't want it to turn into, you know, finger pointing and, hey, this guy here, he could have done a whole lot better. But start implementing an after action review kind of thing so that you have the ability to use your experiences to learn for future experiences, okay? I'm putting up this definition slide again, and again, I just want to hit the safety and security, the differences between those. Safe is the condition that we're trying to maintain within the service, within the building. Security is the mechanisms by which we use to maintain that safe condition. If you're going to call yourself a security team, understand the responsibility that comes with that. There are legal guidelines and legal standards that come along with that. And there's also an ethical standard. If a family comes into the church and they're told, hey, we have a security team, to them, they're going to feel a sense of security and safety to that. Okay, so make sure that when you're setting that standard out for your congregation, you yourselves are actually meeting that standard. And what that standard means is you're taking on a certain risk and a certain liability, and that'll get involved with the law, that'll get involved with insurance companies. If you end up doing something as a security guard, but you're not properly licensed to do that, you may run into issues down the line with legal proceedings and insurance companies. And then the church can turn around and be sued for something. You yourself can turn around and be sued for something. If they're part of a network like the Assemblies of God, Assemblies of God can be sued. So understand that when you use the term security, that actually has meaning to it. Okay? Don't just plaster security on your shirts and then, you know, say that you're security. Okay? All right, and I'm just throwing this slide up here again just so it's fresh in our minds because I'm going to be referencing it in some of the later slides. Again, this is our primary zone. This is the building. This is where your heaviest security presence is going to be. This is where your personnel are going to be. This is where your cameras are. This is where your doors are locked. You're maintaining the flow of traffic. Your greater property, your parking lots and fields and stuff, that's your yellow zone. We want our attention to be focused there. A lot of people are going to focus their attention. A lot of teams that are not trained well will focus their attention inwards. And when you're looking inwards, what's going to happen is threats are going to be able to sneak up on you and enter into the building. So you want your attention to actually be focused out into the yellow. You want to catch the threats out here. Okay? If you can catch the threat out here before it enters your red zone, then you've done your job. And this leads back to what I said before about this kind of being a thankless job. If you're doing things right, you may never get a pat on the back because all the people in here are just going about their normal business. If you're doing your job right and you catch a threat out in the parking lot, they may never be the wiser of it. Okay? So if you have somebody on your team that's just looking for the accolades and just looking for the pat on the back, that may not be the right fit for the team because you need them to be proactive in catching threats out here. Again, in the purple, this is going to be your greater community and the town, the city, whatever it may be. You're monitoring social media. You're maintaining a dialogue with law enforcement. You're just aware of what's going on in your community. Okay? Okay, so the next three slides are going to be some examples of things that a church security team may encounter, okay? And I have, this is gonna be anecdotal to experiences that I've had. There is some statistics, there is some studies out there that kind of back this up, and if you're interested in that, email me and I can send you some material. But I've broken it down into non-invasive, non-emergency, invasive, non-emergency, invasive emergency, okay? Non-invasive, non-emergency, these are gonna be the most common things, okay? So when you're developing your SOPs, when you're talking about training, these are the types of things you want your team to be able to respond to on a more routine basis. The church that I go to is big, okay? We'll have probably 3,000 people in the building per service, okay? So we usually run into something like this once a week, okay? Lost child, lost parent. Happens all the time. Have a procedure in place. If a child comes up to you and say, hey, I can't find my mom and my dad, or if a parent comes up to you and says, I can't find my kid, have a procedure in place. And again, that procedure is going to depend heavily on your church, on your team, their capabilities, and what you have available to you. A disruptive congregant, somebody who disagrees with the pastor and wants to make an argument from the congregation, or they're just out in the lobby and they just had a bad day and they want to get aggressive. Medical responses, and we'll get into emergency medical responses, but these are going to be more your diabetics, these are going to be more your elderly people who have an issue. These are going to be people that have pre-existing conditions. You want to have somebody who's able to respond to those. They happen far more often than you might think, okay? Domestic issues. Obviously, within the church family, you're going to have a lot of people going through divorces, going through separations, a lot of a lot of issues with children and such. You want to be aware of those protective orders and restraining orders that may be present and active amongst your community. It's not necessarily on you to enforce those, but if you need to get law enforcement on the scene, then you need to be aware that that person has a restraining order or a protection order against them. And there may be procedures, again, operating within the state's laws, operating within your capacity as a safety or security team member, there may be things you can do, but you want to be aware if a domestic situation is happening within your church family or that may come into your church, okay? Substance abuse issues, I mentioned this a little bit. Bathrooms. If you're out, if you're patrolling, make sure your patrols go into your bathrooms. A lot of people may not be saved. They may be people from the community, came into the church, they were invited by somebody, but they're still dealing with something. They're still dealing with some sort of substance abuse issue, okay? They may go to the bathroom and they're dealing with whatever they have to. Make sure you're going in there, because if you gotta have your medic apply Narcan to an overdose situation, then you want to make sure that you're trained up and ready to do that. And then mental illness. Obviously, that's another issue that sometimes people with a mental illness may have an episode in there. These are not emergencies. They're not invasive. They may happen within the sanctuary, and you just have to be ready to respond to them. It's not necessarily that it's an emergency, but it is something you need to respond to. So when dealing with all of these things, there's going to be 100 different ways that a team may determine this is how we need to deal with it. What's important and what's consistent is to keep your primary objectives in mind. What do we need to actually maintain? What do we have to keep in the front of our mind? So for these non-invasive, non-emergency, it's minimize the impact on the proceedings. Minimize the impact on the normal service, okay?
So if you have... Do you have the drug overdose as a non-emergency?
Yes.
Is that because it happens so often?
Not because it happens so often. It's that you may be able to deal with that without treating it as a... And when I get into the emergency ones, you'll see that
the
there's a clear difference. This would not be rise to the same level as like an active shooter.
Okay.
This is something that, hey, we may be able to, like I said, apply Narcan. We can call emergency services, but if they're taking their time to get there, we may be able to control the situation.
Okay.
Non-emergency, non-invasive is you may still be able to control that situation with the team that you have present at that time. Okay. But the primary objective is to make sure that that doesn't impact the rest of the service.
Ooh.
Again, if you're doing your job right, nobody in the service will even know that that's happening. Okay. So our response, and again, this is not comprehensive. There may be things that are not on this list, but the response, and again, this will look like, may look a little different with your team and how you guys respond, but segregate the incident and the individual, get them away from the normal proceeding. Make sure that you're communicating with whoever that team leader is. Let that team leader dictate who's responding and how they're responding. If it's something like a disruptive congregant or a lost child, you don't need to have your entire team of six people converge on that one lost child. Maintain your security presence. Maintain your awareness. Keep looking out into that parking lot. That may be something that one or two guys can handle while the rest of the team is paying attention to what they have to pay attention to. This is really important. Make sure that you have some sort of pastor or staff member who's on standby, who's not necessarily preaching, not necessarily involved in the normal Sunday service, that can help respond to somebody with a mental illness, someone who's dealing with a drug addiction. Those people may need counseling. Those people may need to just get plugged into a recovery ministry within the church. You as a security individual, you may be able to do that, but at that time, that's not necessarily your responsibility. Have a pastor, have someone on standby, somebody who works for the church, who's a representative of the church, who can actually come and sit down with that person and speak to them, okay? And have that pre-coordinated, okay? Just be like, hey, call, you know, Pastor John Smith, have him come over and have him talk to this individual, okay? Again, this will most likely not require the entire team. Maintain awareness. Don't drop your security presence. Contact emergency services as needed. Again, lost child, lost parent, you're probably not calling the cops for that, okay? But if you have a substance abuse issue, you may need to get an ambulance on scene. Most likely you will need to. So you'll have to determine that at the time, okay? Next category I got here is invasive non-emergency. This is not necessarily, again, a violent situation, but this may be something now that we want to keep outside into the parking lot. We don't want to let enter into that red zone that I had talked about, okay? This will be a BOLO individual, somebody who's already identified on your BOLO list. Hey, they're not allowed in here. They're trespassed. They're not allowed to come in. Physical altercations. You have two congregants, maybe more, that have decided they want to take care of their argument in the middle of your service or in the parking lot. We actually just had a situation about a year ago. Two guys had met on social media. They didn't like each other. They were arguing over trading cards, and they chose our parking lot as the place where they wanted to settle their dispute. So they showed up in our parking lot, ready to go at each other. Thank God we had picked up on it in the parking lot. We were able to get the police there to handle it. But again, physical altercations may happen. Sometimes these non-invasive, non-emergency ones can escalate into something like a physical altercation. So be ready for that escalation as well. Vandalism. So that FRC study that I referenced in my first session, vandalism was actually the number one most common threats to church. Yeah. Okay. Now, that can come in the form of arson, that can come in the form of a brick thrown through a window, that can come in the form of graffiti, but vandalism is actually the number one thing that churches may face, okay? If it happens when nobody's in the building, okay, there's procedures to deal with that, but be aware that it may happen also while you have people in the building, while the security team is present, okay? And then, big one that I wanted to hit with this session, because it's a more relevant thing, is non-violent protests. And I'll talk about riots and violent protests, but recently with that St. Paul, the Minnesota protest, where the protesters came into the service, I get that's a new thing. That's weird, that's tough, and that's tough to deal with if you've got a small security presence, okay? And if a pastor is preaching on something that's probably not agreed upon by the rest of the community, there is a risk that you're gonna have protesters come in. Be careful not to let that escalate to a violent protest, okay? In those situations, again, nonviolent protests and all of these, remember your objectives. Primary objective, immediately you want to think about the sensitive areas, protecting the kids' areas. If you have other sensitive, you know, handicap areas or something like that, make sure those are locked down and that protesters or the physical altercations don't make their way into those areas. And protecting congregants, okay? Your duty as a safety and security team is to protect the safety of the congregants that are there, okay? Those are your primary objectives. Whatever tactics you use, whatever your team decides to do, keep those objectives in mind. Our job is to protect the congregants. Our job is to protect the sensitive areas, okay? Secondary objectives are gonna be prevent from entering the red zone if it has not already entered your red zone, and prioritize de-escalation. You don't want one of these turning into an emergency situation, which all of these could very easily turn into a violent or emergency situation, okay? Again, what your response should look down, immediately start locking down sensitive areas. Lock down your kids' areas. Lock down your areas where there may be sensitive individuals who you don't want to be involved in that. Team members should respond immediately. So whoever sees it happening, it's on you to now respond and control the situation within your capacity, within what you're able to do, okay? Respond, control it, communicate to your team leadership. Hey, this is what I got going on, and then let your team leadership then direct more resources there or reallocate resources. They will also probably be calling in law enforcement for any of these situations. Contact law enforcement. In these situations, 9 times out of 10, you're contacting law enforcement. Okay, hey, we got a guy here who's not supposed to be here. Okay, I'm calling the police. I'm getting them there if they're not there already. Involve a pastor, church member. Again, maybe useful here. May require the entire team to respond. Now we're getting into situations where you may have to have the entire team respond. Okay, it's really important to make sure the team is communicating, not only with each other, but with all the other ministries and the people around them. Okay. I'm sure I hit everything on that. Okay. Moving on. Now we're going to hit the invasive emergency. So these are going to be your much more rare. Statistically, these things happen very rarely. And I know everybody wants to train for the active shooter drill. Everybody wants to train for what happens if, you know, something crazy happens. But statistically, they're very rare. Not to say that you shouldn't be prepared for them, because we have seen them happen. But just know that these may not be the things that you're necessarily dealing with, okay? So, things that I've categorized here, and again, not a comprehensive list: active shooter, fire or natural disaster, vehicle assault, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment, medical emergencies. Now we're talking about, okay, somebody needs immediate medical attention. Something has happened, they're bleeding profusely, or they can't breathe, or if we don't get emergency services here within the next few minutes, there's a good chance this person may not survive. And I've put violent protests and riots here. So I separated them because there's two different ways to kind of deal with that type of protest that comes in where they want to be violent and would, and it would turn into a riot, okay? Again, this is where you really need to know what lane you're operating in. Are you authorized as security to operate as security? If you decide at this point that you're going to go hands-on with somebody, you're going to tackle somebody to the ground, understand that at that point you're taking on a certain level of liability. Has the church given you authority to take on that liability? Are you licensed? Are you operating within the proper legal guidelines to operate with that authority? Okay. So again, just like with all of these, we're keeping our mind our primary objectives. First one: lock down or evacuate. Okay. Different situations are going to require a different response here. In an active shooter drill, you actually don't want to immediately evacuate the whole building. You may be giving that shooter more targets as people are moving, okay? Have a lockdown procedure in place until this shooter is taken care of. But if you have a fire, you obviously want to evacuate the building as quickly as possible. Again, everybody wants to train for the active shooter, but how many times have we trained a fire drill? If a fire broke out in the building right now, would everybody know the procedure for getting out properly? Okay, so make sure that you guys have a plan, an SOP in place for these. Vehicle assaults. So this looks a lot like somebody wants to drive their vehicle into the main lobby of the building. Okay, we've seen in the past people in the parking lot, they want to be violent with their vehicle, they want to try to run somebody over. Think about, and there's environmental things that you can put up. You can put up the vehicle stanchions to make sure people can't get in there. But understanding that this is also a violent, rare, but possible way that somebody can cause a disruption to your service, all right? Medical emergencies, these are gonna be more, okay, somebody just got shot, somebody just got stabbed, or we have a massive drug overdose. If somebody doesn't get here quick, this person's gonna be in trouble, or they have seizure, heart attack, something like that, that is serious enough that you need to get medical emergency services there. And those nonviolent protests that I talked about before that can very easily escalate into violent protests, that's where it's on you as the safety and security team to try to de-escalate. You want to focus on your objective, locking down the sensitive areas, protecting the congregants, trying to segregate the congregants from the protesters. But at that, you also want to make sure these are already angry people coming into your service, okay? You want to make sure you're trying to de-escalate, stay peaceful until law enforcement can get there to deal with the situation, all right? And again, I harken back to what I said before. It's really important that you maintain a relationship with local law enforcement because you're going to need them to respond in most of these scenarios, and you want to make sure that they're going to be able to get here and help you guys out. And if you have a relationship with them, it makes it easier for that to happen, okay? So what does our response look like in some of these things? So depending on the situation, we're going to enact a lockdown or we're going to enact an evacuation. Again, going back to your SOPs, these are things that you've talked through with your church leadership and your team. These are the things that you guys have drilled out. And you know, okay, hey, we got a fire, we got to immediately evacuate. We got a natural disaster, we immediately have to evacuate. Or we got an active shooter, okay, let's go into our lockdown procedures. Having those procedures in place, training them, and sticking to them, that's going to make the difference in how you as a team respond and how you successfully handle that situation, okay? Immediate whole team response. In any of these situations, the whole team's immediately going to have to respond, okay? There's no, hey, one guy will handle this and I'm going to go over here. And everybody's got to respond. And there has to be the understanding that you might be putting yourself in harm's way, okay? If you're coming onto a safety and security team, you have to understand that you've now taken on that responsibility that I may have to put myself in harm's way for the safety of the congregants or the kids or whatever, okay? What that looks like in practice is determined by you, your security team, your church leadership and such. But like down in Texas, there's a lot of people that carry a lot of guns, okay? And if somebody decides to pull one of those guns out, we the guys on our security team have all talked about the fact that we're the ones stepping in front of a bullet if we need to, okay? And we've taken that responsibility on. So understand that that duty comes with calling yourself safety and security, okay? And that's kind of what I just talked about here. Okay, in these situations, now communication, I've hit on every one of these points. Communication is really important, but in these emergency situations, it's paramount, okay? Things are gonna get hectic, things are gonna get chaotic. How well you communicate as a team via radios, via in-person is gonna be key. And understanding that communication structure, that order is gonna come from the top down, And that's not the time to question orders. That's not the time to say, well, I have a better idea. At that time, you need to trust your leadership and trust that they're giving you the right direction and the right orders. In your after-action reviews, you can talk about all that stuff. In that time, because communication is so key, you need to make sure that the one-way communication maintains, okay? Maintain situation where stay calm, collected, and prepared for congregants to be in a panic. So I don't know how many of us in the room have actually had to deal with an actual chaotic situation before. I can tell you that in that situation, everyone around you is going to lose their mind, okay? When I was doing my special forces training, they had one rule that they would tell us. The three rules of special forces is look cool, never get lost, and if you get lost, revert back to rule one. Okay? And it's funny, but there was actually a purpose to it. Is that it's on you as the guy who everyone's looking to maintain your cool and your calm in a chaotic situation. You need to be the one that's keeping your head about you. Because you may be that thing that people look to help calm down and help get themselves collected. Don't get lost. Don't let yourself get caught up in the chaos. Don't let yourself become panicked. And if you start feeling that panic, revert back to rule one. Okay? You deal with that internally. Okay? Because you then become what that congregation, what those people need to maintain their cool and follow whatever procedures you've then laid out for them, be it evacuation or lockdown. Okay? I got a couple minutes left, and I just want to hit one thing as well. Again, I don't know how prevalent this would be here in New York, but down in Texas, one of the threats that we deal with or that we're constantly thinking of is if we do have somebody come into the service and they are an active shooter, active stabber, how many of the other congregants are carrying a firearm on them?
Right.
And in that situation, we are acutely aware and nervous about the fact that it could just become a free-for-all shooting galley.
Yeah.
Okay? So those are the types of things, is that to not only think about the threat that's coming in, but think about how your congregation will respond in that moment, okay? If you've got parents who are separated from their kids, mm-hmm. they're gonna wanna rush to yeah. their kids, and yep. they're gonna wanna get their kids. It's on you, the safety and security team, to maintain control of that situation. Have a procedure in place. Parents will feel more comfortable to follow the procedure if they know that one is established. If they know, hey, we're gonna evacuate you and we're evacuating your kids, and in the assembly area, you'll be able to link back up with your kids, okay? But in the absence of that procedure, in the absence of that knowledge, people are gonna panic and parents are gonna rush to their kids. You're gonna get some cowboy who thinks that he can do what the security team can't. Or you, in an emergency medical situation, you'll have everybody raise their hand and say they're a doctor, which is great, but in situations like that, it's important that the designated people who have to do that can have room to do their job without distraction, okay? I got a couple minutes left. Here's my resources page again, if you guys didn't get it the first time. Is there any questions from my first session to this one? And again, I'm gonna hand out some business cards. If you guys have questions, feel free to reach out to me directly. I'm happy to help. I'll send you the PowerPoint. Any questions? Anything at all? Yes?
The yellow perimeter that you were talking about?
Yes.
I think the safety teams that are very familiar with their own home church,
yeah.
I think a lot of that they would know who belongs there and who doesn't.
Right.
Might be just a good insight maybe yeah. to make that a regular practice.
Yeah, yeah, and that's where the BOLO list comes in. Even if they're a recognized face, they could be 1 week, they could be happy dad, happy husband, and then they just had a bad week, and now wife's got a protection order out against him,
right.
and now he's made it onto your BOLO list. So just, yes, knowing your congregation, knowing the situations that are happening with your congregation, and the security team maintaining a list of who are the people that we need to keep our eyes on when they come into the building, if they can.
How about the SOPs? What resources do you recommend to develop, like coming from a church that have like ones to develop as a
the first and most important thing I would do is consult a security professional.
Yeah.
Talk to somebody who knows, who can actually speak to your team about this.
Right.
If you have access to that within your church congregation,
yeah.
talk to them as well. But yeah, a lot of it's going to be heavily dependent on your church, your situation, the building you're in,
yeah.
the community you're in, what that's going to look like. But I know I didn't really have a chance to go into how to develop SOPs,
yeah.
but it is crucial that a security team has standard operating procedures that you can train to so that in those chaotic situations, those people know what to revert back to.
Like a tactical, like would it be, I guess, more efficient?
Not just tactical, not just tactical. It's just everything. Hey, somebody's overdosing in the bathroom. What do we do?
Yes. You know? It has to be like different scenarios.
All right, guys, I am out of time. Thank you so much for your attention. And like I said, feel free to reach out to me if you guys need anything.
Yes.
Yes.
Church security. Safety. SOB. No bolo.
So those would be like your emergency situations where, and again, it's going to be on whoever the team leader is to make that determination. They may say, hey, I need all hands. So it's really on the guy who's leading the team to make that call. But if it's an emergency situation like this, you have somebody that came to the church with a firearm, or somebody getting violent, the whole team may need to respond.
You ever heard of shooting?
If you have a security network set up, the building is secure and your pastor's within that, he's just as secure as the rest of our pastor. I am not necessarily of the mind that we should have one guy on the pastor at all times, but now you've got one guy,
you know what I mean?
It's not part
one thing that was good
of that. If your pastor's within the building, the building is secure, then he is just as safe as everybody else. If you determine that there's a need to have somebody on the pastor, okay.
No, the congregants,
that's going to be a security team leader to divert those resources.
Yeah, I had the whole video on YouTube.
And how to respond to those types of things.
I'll send it to you.
Okay. Yeah. Did you get my card?
Yeah.
I think the thing I was thinking about is
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Did you get a card?
No, I
didn't. There you go, man.
All right.
Safe travels. Yeah, thank you so much.